I'm like a human gusher.
Episode 45 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by my fellow authors, my new favorite man to take tequila shots with, Mauricio Rubio, and someone who just doesn't appreciate the modern chicness of sous vide eggs, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone and tell them where they can find you on the interwebs. And since Dad is busy tonight, Mal, let's start with you.
You can find me at baseballprospectus.com, and you can find me on Twitter at mrubio52, Craig.
You can find me at baseballprospectus.com, thedynastyguru.com. Now you can find me once a week at Fox Sports MLB, and once in a while at Vice Sports. And you can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in Corgi Desirer Goldstein. Ben?
It's a strong CD, I have to say. It's not offensive. I think we can all get on board with that.
And it's true.
That's good work for you.
Thank you.
All right. You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus. You can also find me at the Dynasty Guru. Pretty soon, you'll be able to find me at Baseball Prospectus's Boston site. And you can find me on Twitter at Ben Carsley. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle. And you can ask us questions and talk to us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So today is a little bit bittersweet for us because on the one hand, we are all back together again after Arizona, which is great. We have even more personal stories to regale you with on this podcast. We saw a lot of really good players. I just think we have a lot of strong talking points to deliver to you over the next several episodes. But Dad is away being dad and buying houses and having families and being responsible. So we will be without the dulcet tones of Brett Sayer for the evening. That said, we're still going to bring you 4 reader emails. We know it's been a little while. After that, we'll shoot the shit about some of the stuff we saw in Arizona, probably take some pot shots at Brett's expense, and we will look to be back in full force next week. So let's start off with one of those aforementioned reader emails, and this week we begin with Kurt. Kurt says, "Hello again. It came up in passing during a recent trade negotiation with one of the savvier owners in my Dynasty League that we have vastly differing opinions on the work of a certain prospect analyst who shall remain nameless. It's all very subjective stuff, so obviously to each their own, but I was wondering if any of you guys find yourself in constant disagreement with the rankings of any of your peers, either on or outside this soon-to-be award-winning podcast. My curiosity knows no bounds. Kurt." So I don't think we want to throw anyone under the bus here, but what I do think is an interesting question to ask is, you know, how do you reconcile when something you've seen doesn't fit at all with an analyst's opinion, or, you know, when you have two analysts you respect a lot with drastically different takes on a player? Craig, talk about how you deal with that when you're evaluating a player from a fantasy point of view.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's easy not to throw someone under the bus in this situation, and in the sense that I think, and I don't want to speak for you guys, but I imagine just based on what I know and have talked with you all about, is we kind of disagree with everyone at different times. There's no one in particular that, you know, I guess there are people, sometimes your philosophies don't match up, but a lot of times they do. I mean, we make fun of Brett a lot for his Dom Smith love, but I know Keith Law likes him a lot, and I know Chris Crawford likes him a lot, and I disagree with both of them. And that's something that's okay. I mean, disagreements are okay. You have to trust your eye. You have to trust what you know, and you have to trust what you hear. And everyone hears things from different people and can see different things from the same swing or, motion or pitch or any of that. So, I mean, I think you kind of just have to trust yourself and find people who, you know, in terms of finding people who you read as, like, I remember when I started reading these guys, I started with Baseball America, and I still read Baseball America. I read, you know, as I said, Law, Crawford, when it was Parks and Goldstein, I read all of them. And I think it's really instructive to read all of those guys and see where they disagree and see kind of who you find yourself gravitating towards. I originally read Baseball America all the time. Once I found kind of Law and Parks and those guys, I found myself gravitating towards their point of view more so than Baseball America. But I, you know, it, in all honesty, like, that can switch back and that can change from year to year. So I guess the answer to the question is yes, I do find myself in constant disagreement, because you're talking about hundreds of players, and at some point you're not going to find yourself in agreement with somebody. That was kind of vague and rambling, but if you guys have something to add, I don't know, Ben.
Yeah, no, I think you mostly hit the nail on the head. I'll just say that I think a good thing to look for is, you know, if you disagree with someone, don't just think of yourself as disagreeing about that player. Ask why. Did you see the secondaries flash differently? Did you have a differing opinion on bat speed? You know, have you seen the guy six times and maybe a national writer's only seen him once? It's not the national writer's fault, but maybe you actually did get more looks at the guy. I think it's important to sort of, you know, ask more about the process just in the end result of, I don't agree with you. And that's often how I can find guys that I, you know, may trust a little bit more over other guys in the industry, just in terms of, you know, what they're using to evaluate and sort of what priority they place on prospect characteristics. Mal?
I have a few things here. The first thing is that if you've, you know, Ben and Craig, before Craig fully joined on with the prospect team, we're both party to the internal debates about, you know, the top 10 lists, and got to see, you know, just the entire process there, which I think if outside readers saw that, they'd realize that there's a lot of internal disagreements that go on just within certain players.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, like, you know, when, you know, even within our circle and within our team, we have disagreements. Now, most of the time, the disagreements are about minutia, you know, they're half grades that we're talking about, you know, and for the most part, they're also developmental in part. So, you know, I think for me, you know, there's not a list out there that I agree with, 1 through 100. There just isn't, because I'm my own person, and I have my own opinions on what players do and how I think certain players are going to develop, you know, when it comes down, you know, down the line, right? So, it's not that the other writers don't know what the hell they're talking about, or they don't, they're not aware of things, right? They just have different ideas of how, what the player has right now and how that player is going to develop in the future. And I mean, you know, we're always going to have those disagreements, because everybody who has an opinion on prospects comes in with their own set of beliefs and experiences that they place on the prospects that they're viewing. So, you know, certain guys maybe, and this happens a lot in, like, the draft process as well, you know, just in real life. You know, certain guys get burned by white right-handed high school pitchers a lot. So that'll change somebody's opinion on Tyler Kolek, for example. So
I think that's a great point, Mal. And it's something that I was as you were talking about, and I'm sorry for cutting you off, I was going to say, like, so I got to write the prospect preamble for the Futures Guide, out now, go buy it. But part of what I talked about was that, you know, when you're talking about scouting, and what you're doing is you're going to see a player and you're creating kind of a database. And it's all about, you know, what you've seen work and what you've seen ultimately not work. And that's exactly what you're talking about, right? You know, if you've seen a guy with a hitch, a certain type of hitch in his swing, be able to iron it out and become the player he, you know, that you thought he could, despite, you know, that needing that development, you might see it again in another player and be inclined to think, that's fixable. I feel comfortable talking about, you know, or I feel comfortable saying this guy is going to fix that because I've seen it done before. And if it's the opposite, if you've seen that fail and them not be able to overcome it, that's going to influence you too.
Yep, absolutely. That's 100% where I was going with that. Absolutely.
And the, another thing I'd add is just that when you're talking about, I mean, we also need to talk about when you're looking at different prospect analysts, all the guys that we've named out there, everyone has different propensities for risk and risk aversion. And so, you know, know who you're reading and how they approach people. Maybe some guys are more apt to go with safer players, while other guys are more apt to go with high risk, high reward guys. And that's especially when you're talking about back end of the top 100 and stuff like that. You know, guys will fill those in different ways, and no one's right and no one's wrong. It's just kind of what you're comfortable filling in that back area. You know, you can leave a low risk number five starter off the top 100, maybe a Nick Tropiano, or you can put him on there. And, you know, I don't think you're wrong either way. It's just whatever your personal preference is for risk, you know, risk and risk aversion.
Tropiano's a really good name for the back of there, because, you know, he's, you know, there's all sorts of varying opinions, but I feel like a lot of the grades out there on him are similar. So it's like, you know, how does this like develop out, and how does this grade out towards the future? And, you know, people have just all sorts of different opinions on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of guy that you might agree on the exact type of player he is and disagree on the type of value that has.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Excellent. All right. That was a good discussion, good healthy discussion. I'm going to move us on to our next question, in which I am fairly certain Nick Tropiano will not come up. And this question
is... You don't know that.
I don't. I said fairly certain. I qualified it. But if you want to talk... If you bring up Tropiano for this, we are certainly about to have one of those differences in evaluated opinions coming to you live. This question is from Sam. And Sam says, "Hey dudes, thanks for answering so many questions of mine so far. This time around, how would you go about finding undervalued aces for rebuilding a team? Just had a draft where I'm kicking myself for missing on Urias, had him in the round after drafting Nick Franklin, womp womp. How can I find some younger aces to draft or sign off of waivers? Who out there is a year or two away from becoming an ace? Putting my window starting at next year to compete, year after to truly compete. Thanks, guys. And Craig, you're awesome."
Goddamn right.
So this is a good question, although I am going to tweak it a little bit. Anyone who is going to be an ace in a year or two, you already know about and is already owned, because in general, they're not even prospects. They're younger major league pitchers who are, you know, finding their way. And if they are prospects, they're the super, super high-end guys. You know, they're your Syndergaards, your Uriases. Quite frankly, even Giolito's probably not going to be at that level in 2 years. So, you know, we don't have any super sneaky names for you that you haven't heard of if that's the sort of really aggressive timetable you're looking at. But if you want to find guys who I think could be viewed as future aces, you know, within the next calendar year or so, I think that's an area where we can help you out more. So, Mal, why don't you lead us off and give us an example?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just kind of going off of what you said, these names aren't going to be super sneaky, although Ben has kind of a super sneaky name, but he's, you know, he's been around. I think one of the guys that I'm just going to go with the names first, and I'm going to go about the process second, because the way that I think of it is that the names kind of explain what I look for. One of the things that I heard a lot of, you know, in spring training and a lot of the reports that I've seen, Grant Holmes has the opportunity to really blow up. So it's you know, he's one of those guys that I think if you're really looking for undervalued aces or guys who are going to take a major step forward in the next year or two, I think he's one of those guys. He's got the big dick fastball. He's got a curveball that's really developing along pretty nicely. You know, and the changeup is pretty good as well. He's had a pretty solid spring training this year, and he's got the type of body and the type of build that you really look for in a pitcher and in a starter. So this is one of the guys that I think that you're going to be hearing about a lot. And I think that for me personally, what I look for when I'm looking for pitchers who can take major step forwards is I look for a big fastball. You know, I do look for, you know, not necessarily high velocity, but a fastball that even if it's working like 92, 94, you know, it's moving around, it's got good command on it, and a pretty solid breaking ball, and if possible, another breaking ball. So, you know, two breaking balls and a big fastball. I think that's pretty much what I look for, along with, you know, prototypical starter size. So that's me. I'm Ben. You want to go with your name?
Yeah, I'll go with another guy from this most recent draft, and I think he's sort of undervalued in terms of names who are new signees for Dynasty League owners, and that's Tuki, I think it's Toussaint. It could be Toussaint. I think it's Toussaint Farbe appropriate for me to ever mispronounce a name on this podcast. And he's all about upside. He's not terribly high probability. He's not going to move very quickly. You're going to have to be patient. But, you know, in our Diamondbacks top 10 list, we gave him 7 potential fastballs, 7 potential curveballs, 6 potential change. He's very athletic. It's really hard not to like the arm speed a lot. So, you know, he's got a lot to get under control. He's not very smooth mechanically right now. I know he's had some walk issues already, or is at least projected to, and he's in the low levels. So you're going to have to wait a while. But, you know, I think that he's one of those guys where not everything is going to have to click for him to look really good against low minors competition. And I think he could be held in much higher esteem at this point next season. Do you have anyone, Craig?
Yeah, and I'd like to throw another caveat out there that, you know, most of the time when you're talking about guys this far away and or like under the radar, I mean, under the radar potential aces almost don't exist. You know what I mean? Because there are so few actual aces in baseball that like finding someone who is going to turn into one of those guys is an extreme rarity. So I just want to put that caveat out there and say that, you know, most of these guys are going to, you're ultimately talking about, you know, middle of the rotation, maybe even back of the rotation. And that's not bad. That's still a good thing, you know? But the two names I was thinking of were the Rangers first round pick from last year, Luis Ortiz. The reports on this guy have been just utterly incredible. I saw Texas twice when we were in Arizona and unfortunately didn't get to see him throw, but everything has been like beyond glowing. And I'm talking about like improvements from even what we graded him out as in the Rangers top 10 this off season. Just everything's been really good. And I think that's a name that's kind of flying under some radars because he's in a really deep system. He was ranked 6th, but you know, even there we gave him a 6 plus fastball, a 6 slider and a 5 plus changeup, all potential. But that's someone who could really develop and possibly shoot up ranks quickly. Another name I'll throw out there is Foster Griffin of the Royals. He was another draftee from 2014, and he's just, you know, he's 6'4", 200 pounds. He's just like the ideal pitching build, and he's like a big ball of clay right now. And we'll see, you know, whether he can be molded into something. The Royals don't have the best track record of that, but I think that's, you know, he's someone who down the line could be something. And as Ben said, this is well outside the 2-year timetable, but you know, he's a name I'd keep an eye on.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you have to go outside that 2-year timetable. I mean, that's the only way, unless you were going to say Jacob DeGrom last year, like it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the other thing is, like you said, it's guys at the major league level that you kind of have to keep an eye on, guys who are, you know, learning a new pitch and having it be effective. You know, I don't think he's going to be an ace, but I mean, look at what the split change did for Jake Odorizzi. I mean, he went from not being able to miss bats to missing 10 per 9. Like, that's insane. And so you have to look for guys who are maybe tinkering with stuff like that. I mean, when it comes to prospects, do you want us to say want me to talk about Jake Thompson again? You know about him. I don't think he's going to be an ace, but if you told me that, you know, in the top, you know, in his 99th percentile performance, that's what it was, I could buy it. I mean, do you want to talk about Carlos Rodon, who's amazing, but you know about him, you know?
Yeah, these aren't necessarily like, you know,
under the radar guys.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, you look for the aces, you always want to look for the number twos, but perhaps you'd also be better served finding number three starters, because those guys do have like a lot of pop up potential, and you know,
Ben might disagree based on
his guys. Yeah. So in my futures guide, it's out, buy it now. Peace. Basically, I made a pretty long argument about why mid rotation fantasy prospects are a terrible investment. I think what Mao is talking about is finding number threes at the major league level who have a chance to jump. Yeah. And I agree that's a smarter play. Yes. But yeah, the research I did research over the last 5 years of prospect rankings and found that you're probably screwed if you invested heavily in guys who didn't project to be better than mid rotation starters.
Now, I wanted to ask you, Ben, what was it like doing research for the first time?
It was really tough because I had to email intern at Baseball Prospectus and say, do this for me. And that took almost 30 seconds, I think, because I think I did interns at first and that wasn't right. So
that goes to a different sector. You don't want that.
Yeah, it was difficult.
No, you had to rest the old digits after that.
Yeah, especially difficult for me was counting the number of players who had injuries, because it became a number greater than 20, and I'm not terribly comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's why. Wait. So now we know why everyone's a top 20 prospect for you.
I got to, I think it was 28 out of 52, and I was going to express that as a percentage, and I just ended up saying most.
Wait, wasn't your Twitter handle mm-hmm. Ben Carsley 22?
It was, but there was no math involved.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I didn't have to count to 22. I just could confidently state that that's my birthday.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, while we're on the topic of someday aces, I'm going to move us on to this question from Avery. Avery says, is Avery a friend of the podcast? I don't want to take that away from him if we've already established it.
I don't know.
I don't know. Let's read the email and decide. How about that?
I feel like the questions are good, but he lacks the humor.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like we end up saying Avery Mayer a lot. Anyway, this question is from Avery. He says, last year, Archie Bradley was the second best pitching prospect in the top 101, right behind Ty Walker. He only dropped a couple spots this year, but it seems like a lot of scouts are very down on him after his rough 2014 season. What are y'all's thoughts on Bradley, and is his role with the Diamondbacks this year? Thanks, guys. Avery. So the whole Tino crew is in a new dynasty league with some other people from Baseball Prospectus, some professional scouts who, you know, we're not at liberty to discuss, which is a very bizarre name drop by me. But anyway, people who generally know what they're talking about, and me. And I was shocked by how far Bradley fell until I realized that I didn't want to take him either. You know, I think in my personal top 101, I actually had Bradley as the third or fourth best fantasy starter prospect. That's not where I took him. I took John Gray before him, and he really fell. So I think it's a bit of a reaction to what happened last year, but I do think that he's riskier than people acknowledge. I know he had huge issues with command last year. A lot of reports I read said that the curve was really coming and going, and that's an issue for him because that, you know, along – we all know about the fastball, but the curve was sort of that, you know, real bread-and-butter pitch for him in terms of an off-speed offering. So if the curve isn't working and he has command issues, who cares how hard he throws? I mean, he still has – a workhorse body. He's still really young, which is what I think people forget. I mean, he's not going to be 23 until August. So I'm not worried about Bradley in the long term in terms of being a starter, but I don't think he's going to be a guy who reaches the majors and performs as a top of the rotation pitcher. You know, I think he's going to be a guy who reaches the majors, strikes a lot of people out, and might have a year or two where he flirts with an ERA around 4 as he really figures out how to refine his arsenal and how to, you know, improve not just his control but also his command in terms of strikes within the zone. So I guess that's how my view of Bradley has changed, and that I think the ultimate upside is still there, but I don't think we're terribly close to seeing it, even if reports have been fairly positive this spring. Do you agree or disagree, Mal?
No, I agree with your assessment. I think one of the things that he did pick up since this year was he did pick up a cutter that I saw it in the Arizona Fall League. I didn't get to see him this time around in spring training, but it did flash plus, and it's looking like a weapon, right? But every time that it was my turn to pick, and I knew I should have taken Archie Bradley at that segment, I just didn't want to. So like I ran into kind of the same dilemma that you did, where it's like, yeah, okay, this guy's he's got the pedigree and he's got the body and he's got a lot of stuff that I like and he's playing around with the cutter, which I kind of like, but there's just other guys that I'm more willing to take the risk on. So, you know, I think overall your assessment is correct. I also think that the go-to lazy comp for what you just described is Brandon Morrow. And it's just, you know, I'm not sure I want that. Craig, what about you? What do you think?
You know, I went into last year. I actually had Noah Syndergaard as my top pitching prospect heading into last year, which didn't really work out great either. I wasn't as high on Bradley because I didn't think he'd reach the majors. Not because he'd have a backslide like he did. I'm not prescient or anything like that, but mostly because I thought Arizona had a decent amount of starting pitching depth and other guys that they might go to before Bradley, such as Chase Anderson. But, you know, ultimately, I don't know. I think I've gone from being kind of the low guy in that sense to something of the high guy. I'm kind of really slow to adjust where I have somebody. And while Bradley has certainly taken a step back, the cutter slash slider that Matt was talking about was an interesting little wrinkle in the fall league, and I'll be interested to see how that works out going forward. I mean, the bottom line is he was by no means like a finished product that the Diamondbacks were just waiting to call up and then backslid. He always had some control issues. And while the stuff was good enough to miss in the zone, he wasn't always in the zone anyway. So I think this is just part of nonlinear development. And I'm interested to see how he bounces back from something like that. Obviously it's a step back, as I've said, but I guess I want to wait a little bit to see if he can, respond to that adversity in a positive level. I mean, maybe his stuff isn't as good, but maybe he can learn to manipulate it a little differently, or mix in this slider, or sequence better, or any number of things that happens as guys learn how to pitch. It's okay to be a different pitcher than he was, as long as he can be as an effective pitcher as he was. And so I guess I'm waiting to see if that happens. As for his role with the D-backs this year, they still have a ton of pitching depth. It's all bad. So I don't know. I wouldn't expect to see him maybe till August or September, depending on who is healthy in Arizona and all of that. Like they have an unbelievable number of not good starters that I think they're going to churn through before turning to Bradley. I do still think he's someone that they'll turn to before a Shipley and maybe even a Blair. So I still think he's at the top of that list, but they have a lot of crappy depth. So I wouldn't be anticipating him. I wouldn't be anticipating him arriving early on this year.
Man, that could be a subtitle for the Diamondbacks. Jeez. The Diamondbacks.
Crappy depth. Yeah,
it's kind of true. They have it kind of across the board.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What a way to be. Okay. That's pretty good. I think we can get on to the question that isn't real now, which is from someone who is definitely a friend of the podcast, Roto Lando. Roto Lando says, "Dear Bert, Mo, Greg, and Cartwright, imagine if you were in a dynasty league with a 40-man roster with some smart owners. Your draft went really, really well. You filled all your positions to your satisfaction, even relief pitchers, by round 39. Who is the last player you take who is going to put you over the edge and prove to the world that they were fools to oppose you? Roto Lando, P.S., can you get BP to pay for the rights to use Lionel Richie's classic, 'Hello, is it me you're looking for'?"
Oh my God,
Brett's theme music. You really did.
Roto, you are so one of us.
Yeah. Yes,
he really is.
Yeah.
For me, the answer to this question is easy. Roman Quinn, both of these, called that 2 years ago, and now you'd be fine with him. So y'all can eat a bag. Craig?
I don't know who. I guess mine is Jorge Bonifacio.
Oh God, he will always be your 40th round pick.
Is that wrong? That's probably the guy I picked. No, right?
You know, he kind of grew on me when we.
He might go.
Him.
He might go he in kinda... like the 37th. I don't know.
No, seriously. Like, I think that's the guy I would take. Right?
No, yeah, that's 100% the guy you'd take. Yeah,
sounds like you.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think that's who it would be. I have a constant rotation of guys, but probably him. Now,
There's two options I wanted to go with here. One is going to get me made fun of forever.
Aaron Blair.
No, not Aaron Blair. It's Gleyber Torres. But the second option that I was thinking about going with, I don't think many people have heard of this player, but it's Enya.
Welcome back to episode 45 of Tino. I hope you used that break to acquire the Orangina of your choice.
What?
It's very professional. Very professional start to the second half here, Ben.
I'll do it again, right?
No. We're
of my choice, and it's the rich man's one.
No, we're going with this now.
Tell the people what you're drinking, Craig.
I'm drinking a San Pellegrino Aranciata.
Which is just terrible.
No, it's not.
It's average, but I'm just, it's the in context, I'm just disappointed.
It's delicious. How dare you?
Perfect. All right. I'm sorry. Shouldn't have started this.
Well, that's for damn sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about our trip from Arizona, which we've all sadly been foisted back into reality for about a week now. I guess not all of us a full week, but it's getting to be about that time. So Arizona was amazing. If at any point you can take 4 or 5 days out of your life and go to spring training with some of your good friends, definitely do it. It doesn't matter what you have to put aside. Doesn't matter what it costs. Just go do it. Totally worth it. So this year we stayed in Scottsdale, correct? Scottsdale or Glendale?
Scottsdale.
Okay, there's no difference. We stayed in Scottsdale. And this was great because we got to see a whole bunch of different teams, visit a whole bunch of different stadiums, you know, a lot of backfields at 8 a.m., do that until 12, get lunch, go see an A game at 1, saw some B games, really anything you could want to see. We got a nice smorgasbord of minor league action. So we're probably going to have a fantasy article about this coming out next week. I think Craig and I are going to do a Dynasty Dynamics outlining what we thought of some of these guys from a Dynasty point of view. Right now, I know that the BP prospect team has been outlining a lot of what they saw in Arizona. So I certainly encourage you to consume all of those various forms of media in addition to what we're going to talk about right now. But what I want to do is just go round robin and have everyone mention, you know, one or two players who really stood out to you this trip, what's different about them or what caught your eye and why we think that matters from a dynasty point of view, if it's not obvious already. So, Craig, let's start with you. Give us a player who really caught your eye this time around.
Well, I mean, it's someone I've talked about a ton, but Nomar Mazara was freaking amazing. I wrote about him for Notes on the Field. We included Nick Wheatley-Schaller's, was a GIF or a Vine of him? I think it was a Vine in like one quarter speed. And I have that shot on video too. He hit a monster home run, like 415 plus feet on a line. Granted, it was a 2-0 count, and I think he was guessing at what was coming, but he got it and knew exactly what to do with it. So I have been the high man on Mazara for a long time, and you know I took him over Gallo in the TDGX draft last year. He was the first of the Rangers prospects I took, and you know it's. I don't know. I still kind of believe in him. I will recognize that Gallo is a better prospect right now because of the power potential. But if I had to pick one of them, I think I still might take Mazara just because of the security that I feel like he has. We saw a lot of Texas. Texas has so many guys. It's almost not fair. I saw a guy who I really like, Yasin Irizarry, who is more than just a good name. He, I think he can stick at shortstop. He's like a stocky guy, but he has really good actions. He's got a really smooth, clean swing. I don't know that he's necessarily a dynasty guy or a fantasy guy until he gets to the higher levels, because it's really going to depend on how well he hits. But he's just a guy I really liked, you know, to watch and really enjoyed seeing him. And how precocious his talent was at such a young age. I'll throw it out to Mal while I kind of think of someone else to talk about.
Yeah, we saw a ton of guys, and I think in keeping with the first name being the biggest name, the one dude that I was very very much blown away with was Carlos Rodon. This is a dude that like we all know about, and I mean he's a huge prospect, and you know there's a lot to like about him. One of the things that you know, I have never seen him in person before this trip. So one of the things that really, really stuck out to me is just how thick he is. Like, the man is just thick, like, throughout his entire body. He's got an extraordinarily thick lower half. His forearms are just very muscular. He's well-built. He's put together very well and solidly. You know, there are some concerns about his command and his control. You know, I think these are going to be things that carry over into 2015. It's not going to be a quick fix, I don't think. right? Like we're talking about someone who's going to probably be dealing with command issues for, you know, quite some time. But I still think that, you know, just given the frame, the stuff, and the fact that the changeup is developing, and it showed in my viewing of him pretty well, that I think this is a guy who can start, and I think he's going to stick in the rotation. And I do think that the White Sox would be well served to put him in the rotation this year. You know, there's going to be some clunkers mixed in there. You know, this isn't a guy who I don't think he's going to have, you know, just a string of dominant performances right out of the gate, and I think that's just an unrealistic expectation. You know, it's just inconsistency is going to be natural to, you know, what he produces in 2015, but I think this is a guy who's going to flash the occasional great start, and, you know, this is someone that I'm very excited about. You know, staying on the same team, I suppose, and then I'll kick it out to Ben, as I think about some guys. You know, Micah Johnson, he's a second baseman. You know, he's in the mix for the starting job for the White Sox in 2015, mainly because the other options at the Keystone aren't necessarily great. We're talking about Carlos Sanchez, Gordon Beckham, and Emilio Bonifacio. So those aren't, it's not exactly a murderer's row that he's competing with, but there are certainly some things that you like about Micah. He's got the speed. And, I mean, I guess that's really the one thing. He's not necessarily...
Things. That was a bold statement.
Yeah, I know. That was very bold. It was too bold. You know, he's not built like your D. Gordon type. He's very solidly built, and he's also got some thickness to him. But he loses a lot of what natural strength that he has just in his swing mechanics. He's a two-phase hitter. He bails pretty quick in his swing. Just kind of throws the ass out there. So it ends up really undercutting what any natural power that he has. But, you know, he's fast enough, and I mean, the defense needs a lot of work, but, you know, this is a guy who's a hard worker, and I've heard a lot of good reports about his makeup. So, you know, that's probably a guy he's been on a steady improvement ever since he's gotten into the league or into professional baseball. And he's gotten to the point where he's, you know, even though the competition isn't that stiff, he's legitimately a contender to be a starter on a team that's looking to compete in 2015. So that's a guy that I was, you know, that I would keep eyes on too. Ben?
Yeah, I'll add to Rodon. I hadn't seen him in person either, and you know, you hear about the slider, and you think to yourself, okay, is it really going to be that good? And not everyone he threw was that good, but there were three or four where you're like, yep, I get it. If he can do that consistently, that is a motherfucker.
Yeah, even when he was missing high, he was like, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's got some movement on it. The two guys I want to talk about, first one, another Rangers outfielder who we discuss frequently on this podcast, but I was even more impressed with him this year, is Lewis Brinson, who is very, very fast, especially underway, and who has filled out a little bit in a good way, and I thought took some pretty healthy cuts. I still think he's stronger than people realize, and I'm wondering if, you know, the scouting reports are going to start to catch up to that, especially as more people put eyes on him this spring. But he is not just a speed guy. He has got plenty, plenty of power. And if he gets the hit tool to play up to a 35 at the major league level, between the power and the speed and the ability for plus defense, we're talking about a potential star. So I was super impressed with Brinson. And another outfielder, I saw Hunter Renfro hit a homer that I think landed 5 minutes ago. He hit this homer about 2 weeks ago now. He's a big, big boy. You can tell when a team has a type. It's like every Indians prospect I saw was smaller than I thought. Every Padres prospect I saw was bigger than I thought. Renfro is like a defensive end. I mean, he is a mammoth dude. And the swing's a little faster than I thought. Not the swing, the bat speed, I guess, is a little faster than I thought. And it's just got that special sound off the bat when he made contact. It was an absolute cannon. So, you know, I think I saw him take 2 intra-squad at-bats. It's not like I have a great read on him. But the usable raw, what I saw from that, left an impression with me.
A couple other names I'll throw out there. I got to see Gilbert Lara take batting practice, and boy, is his swing weird. I posted that to my YouTube channel, and so if you look for it, I think there are 5 rounds of BP on there. He does a really weird thing where he kind of he holds his hands back kind of almost too long and then really rotates and pulls his swing through, like actively pulls it through with his arms. I know what I described is really weird, but if you go watch the video, I think you'll see what I'm talking about. And it's just a bizarre way to swing. But at the same time, he was really good at getting to pitches that, you know, kind of were falling out of the, you know, were falling out of the zone. And he adjusted up and down really well because he was able to wait for it. And he showed good bat speed. So I thought that was really interesting. Monty Harrison, I saw take BP as well. He's really added, he's added some weight. He's a thicker guy right now. And he's, we weren't able to see him run. It was just BP. So whether he's retained the plus speed is a question. But he doesn't use his lower half almost at all in his swing. And he still generates plenty of pop. So if they can get him to kind of introduce his lower half into, incorporate his lower half into his swing, I think he could be really special. He's still really raw, obviously, but that's someone else to keep an eye on. And the last name I'll talk about, and I think Jordan Garrosh is going to have something on him on tomorrow, or I guess possibly today, if you're listening to this on Friday, on the Notes from the Field, Jose Leclerc, who's a guy I think I've brought up here or there as a reliever in the Texas system. They're stretching him out to start, and he throws, you know, 93, 95, and he's got a big curve with sharp break that arrives in the mid 70s. But the pitch with him, he throws a tepid participation on Twitter is a great guy to follow for Rangers information. He called it a cut change, but I swear to God, this pitch, I saw him throw for two innings. It cut away from righties. It dropped straight down. And once it cut in on a righty, it's just this bizarre pitch. And Leclerc calls it a changeup, and the scouts call it a slider, and it's a hell of a pitch. I think there were six swings and misses on it in the two innings that we watched him throw. Now, he's 6 foot. He's listed at 6 foot. He might be a little bit smaller than that, but I don't know if he can hold up in the rotation, but holy crap, is he fun to watch.
He's just throwing wiffle balls out there, basically.
Basically, it's ridiculous. I honestly don't. I don't even like. I don't know how to describe it. I'm gonna try and cut some video that I got of it for Jordan's piece, and hopefully people can see what we're talking about there. But I don't have the words for it. It is ridiculous.
I just got sad that we never played wiffle ball.
Yeah. We never played wiffle ball. We talked about that last year too.
Ben, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, so if you don't have anything to say, but I know we saw Frazier, and I figured it's a good chance to talk about him with Brett out of the room.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, really, we only saw him take BP, so you can definitely understand why people like the bat speed, is what I'd say.
Yeah, he didn't hit anything to right second base.
No, he didn't. No, he certainly did not. Lots of foul balls, lots of line drives over the third base bag, some deep balls to left. Like I said earlier, a little smaller than I imagined, but he's also still young. And I, you know, even if he doesn't get a lot taller, I think he has the potential to put on a little bit of good weight. I don't really know if I saw enough to make a sweeping conclusion. I know we overheard him have a really interesting discussion with his hitting coach. If you want to get into that,
I don't know if I want to go into that. But he's you know, he basically the end of the conversation, they were talking about his hitting mechanics and his stance and stuff like that. And the coach said, you know, you look really good. They were talking about tweaking some stuff and making sure that he repeats some stuff. But he said, you look really good. And at the end, Frazier said that he felt like he felt the best about his swing that he had in pro ball. So he had a really strong finish to last year. And assuming he maintained over the off season, you know, whatever changes he made. I mean, it makes sense that he would say that, but it's obviously confidence is a huge part of the game, and that he feels good about it is a good thing, you know, but we'll see how that plays out going forward.
Yeah. The Midwest League is tough early in the season for like young guys. It is. It's a cop out, right?
But that he made adjustments is a big deal.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, you know, it's, I think it's clear that maybe we were a little high on him, but he's still got the talent that I think warrants a lot of discussion. So
sure. One other guy that we saw, and I don't mean to talk over anyone, Mejia, in that same batting practice group, he actually caught a round and then joined Frazier's group for hitting. And we were warned by this, warned of this by Chris Mellon, but he's smaller than you think. And like, we can tell you he's 5'8", maybe. And like, we can tell you that, but you're going to, if you haven't seen him and you go see him, you're going to think, oh, he's smaller than I thought. But he still got, he was a really aggressive hitter in this live BP session. So I, you know, it's hard to take much from that. You know, maybe he just wanted to get his swings in. You know, it's everything that you've heard about, I think, kind of held true in terms of the, at least in the limited look that we saw, but he is smaller than you thought. So if you think he's going to have kind of plus power, I would back off that a little bit, but I think above average is attainable, maybe a 55, if it all works out.
Yeah, that's a perfect outcome. I'm going to do some quick hitters here. And then I kind of want to have a larger discussion about Eddie Butler, because I think that was kind of a performance that opened a lot of eyes, for better or for worse. One of the dudes that I saw is my old friend Ronald Guzman. We saw him last year, and he's coming off just an atrocious year in 2014. It was bad all around. You know, to give you a physical descriptor of the kid, he's tall, he's really long-limbed, and he's broad-shouldered, right? So these are like kind of the aspects that you like, you know, out of a potential power hitting first baseman. You know, and once upon a time, we did give him a 6 potential hit and 6 potential power when he was the number 10 prospect in the Texas Ranger system. Some of that has fallen off. You know, his swing is fluid, and it looks nice, and it's he's got good bat speed. But he can get long because he's got long arms, and it can take him a little bit to get to the ball. So, you know, there are just going to be some natural holes in the swing and the power. You know, you dream on the power and you think that it can develop out. And I mean, there's still the potential there for it, but I'm not sure how conducive the swing is to plus power. So, you know, he's a guy who's like, he grew a lot, you know, in the time since he signed, and you know, he's still trying to get used to his body. You know, his athleticism looked a little bit better in the brief action that I saw him. So, I mean, maybe that's a good indicator that, you know, he's getting more used to just how large he is at this point. And hopefully that kind of helps him at the plate as well. But you know, this is a project guy, and he's a first base profile, and he's going to have to really hit in order for him to be relevant. So, you know, it's a guy that I still like. I'm still rooting for Ronald Guzman, but there's a lot of roadblocks in his way, and he's going to have to answer a lot of questions this year just about his overall profile. One of the guys that he's probably not going to be fantasy relevant, but I just kind of want to talk about him because he's had such a weird developmental path, is Heimer Candelario. He's one of the Cubs third basemen. The first time I saw him, he was fat, right? He was like this pudgy third base kid. He was a little tall. He had a big ass, and his swing and his game was weird because he was one of those guys who I felt like he had good pitch recognition skills and really understood the strike zone very well. And there were like, when I saw him in the Midwest League the first time around, I think it was 2013, you know, he was a guy who would spin on pitches on the outer half and really understood that, you know, this is a pitch that I don't want to swing at, and this is a pitch I do want to swing at. But his swing is a little linear. I don't think there's much power projection in there. I think you're probably looking at 30 power, maybe 40. I didn't really see him all that much at present. He lost a lot of weight last year and then started really dipping the shoulder and trying to go for power. He had a disastrous high A showing in Daytona. He went back down to low A. I saw him again. The swing just it wasn't the same as it was in 2013, even though he lost weight. And, you know, kind of fast-forwarding to spring training this year, he was back to kind of inciting out the ball and hitting line drives over the third baseman, you know, not necessarily pulling it or trying to go for power, but using all fields and kind of going with the pitch, which is, you know, those are the things that I liked the first time around. So it's, you know, he's had an interesting developmental path, and I think he's really starting to get back to a lot of the things that made him a fringe prospect back in 2013, and hopefully you know, it'll go well for him in 2015. You know, he's also got a lot of questions that he's going to answer. I saw Nick Travieso as well, you know, Cincinnati Reds prospect. That's a guy who's got a really soft body and soft stuff. you know, he made a lot of adjustments in the Midwest League last year as well. And, you know, it's spring training, right? And some of those guys, like, really like to slack. But I think just from my viewing and what I saw, I wasn't impressed. And, you know, it looks like he's still got some work to do if he wants to keep the gains that he made in 2014. That was a lot of me talking. So let's go ahead and kick it out to Ben.
Hello?
Ben?
Ben?
Is Ben on mute?
I don't know.
Ben's on mute. Yes, Ben's on mute. God damn it. I had the funny joke, too. I had the good joke.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, Ben.
No, I know. You guys said, Ben, do you have anyone to talk about? And I said, let's talk about Pete O'Brien's arm. And you guys were, there we go. See? Okay, that's all I got.
To be fair, it's a little, the word has come out kind of after we saw him that he does have the yips right now. So
yeah, that's, I would hope. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, but also explains a lot.
Like the yippiness of his throws.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you just talked a lot, Mal, but I honestly, I'm not sure what was eye-opening about Butler. So if you want to talk about that, and if you could refrain from talking about a prospect's ass for once, that would also be.
Although his name is Butler, so.
His name is Butler. I think that we all kind of came away with a different impression of him than we had, maybe even a year ago, right? Or at least that's what Jordan talked about in his write-up. So it's,
That's true for Jordan, then.
Yeah, it might be true for Jordan. Because I don't know. What was your impression? Did anything change for you?
What I found interesting was... I'd never seen him. What I found interesting was that... you hear about, if he's not going to make it as a starter, maybe he'd be a good reliever. But what I saw was that the harder he was throwing, the higher his fastball was. And it seemed like it, started to lose movement and he couldn't place it as well. So I'm starting to cast a little bit of doubt on that. Perhaps that could be refined if he did move to the bullpen full time. Not that he's probably going to have to. I do think he can start. But I thought his fastball was more effective. The first two innings we saw him when he was – I don't know, what was he, I think, in the 91 to 93 range, 90 to 93 range. Then when he got up to 95 later in his outing and he was leaving, everything up around the chest and getting hit by Yips O'Brien.
Yips can hit a little bit, though.
I know, I just wanted to make fun of him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the biggest thing that I kind of was surprised by, I guess, was that he had always been described as having a crossfire delivery, and that's really not what we saw. And I don't know if that's... I kind of felt like that was different. I guess I did see him on TV briefly last year, but I wasn't paying that close attention, if I'm going to be honest about it. So I don't recall if that's a change implemented over the offseason, and maybe that's affecting his command. He did kind of seem to struggle keeping it down at the knees. A lot of stuff was at the thighs, and he got hit around. But it's also, this is the danger of, it's a 3-inning start in spring training. So I don't really want to draw any sweeping conclusions from it. In that sense, I saw him get swings and misses on the fastball, which is a really good thing. So I think obviously I kind of saw what people liked about him all the way, and I saw him struggle with command. So, I guess at that point it comes down to consistency, which isn't really different than, you can say about a lot of guys. So I don't know. I didn't find that necessarily eye opening so much as I thought it was kind of like, he was a little rusty, or he struggled a little bit.
I guess I have one more question. Did anybody have a Giovanni Soto moment?
I didn't see any, I don't think.
Okay.
I want to say there was an old guy I kept seeing, but it wasn't Soto, obviously, this year. But, this is going to be frustrating. I did see, I saw Christopher Negron take Corey Kluber deep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we saw that.
That was special.
That was pretty cool. We also saw Troy Tulowitzki just annihilate a ball.
He's better than people who are not good.
Yeah.
By a long
Yeah, if you guys want a sleeper, it's Troy Tulowitzki.
Actually, he plays
for the Rockies.
You want to know the guy who I kept seeing and I didn't want to? The guy stepping in front of my fucking camera as I tried to videotape prospects swinging like David Dahl. That's why I thought
the tweet you posted of that guy's stupid head in front of Dahl was amazing.
Isn't it? The best thing is, know how stupid he is.
Yes.
Just from that.
He had the bad head too. It just wasn't good.
Yeah, nothing about that was all right. And the worst thing about it was that it was a bunch of different people.
Yeah. Well, but still, I'm encapsulating them all. The one guy who I hate.
That's a good decision. Bad. Yeah, it's a good decision.
Bottle the rage. I think it's the best way to do it. I wonder if someday we'll all be at an Enya concert together and someone's just going to stand up in the seat above you and you're going to miss Enya's grand finale. Welcome back to episode 45 of There Is No Off Season. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. The BP Futures Guide is out and you can purchase it right now. It's got analysis from all four of your favorite Tino contributors, so please be sure to check it out. A bunch of us have some exciting new initiatives going on as well, which you heard Craig mention early on in the podcast, but we're writing new places, taking on new projects at BP, trying new things, so please support us there, even if you don't really like it right away. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We've had a bunch of good reviews lately, but the more the merrier, and we'd love to get to 100 before the season is over. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast. Get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at There Is No Off Season. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Mauricio at mrubio52. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in Constant Dissenter Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
I feel like you've used that one before, but it might just be because it's great.
I think we've used the sector, but not that combination.
It's a San Pellegrino Aranciata.
Oh, wow.
God. Fucking Cardinals middle infielder of beverages.
Yeah, that's...
I'm just carrying on the Goldstein tradition.
I was, yeah. That's Orangina to the max.
This is the rich man's Orangina.